Sex is the most important genetic trait. And one of the things that I've been working for over the last decade is sexing sperm. So this is equipment used for sexing sperm, and it's a very sophisticated, very impressive from an engineering standpoint. And here are a couple of parameters of that equipment. So that machine with the nozzle makes about 80,000 droplets per second. And about a third of those droplets will contain a sperm. If we have it too concentrated, some of those drops have two sperm. The detectors that evaluate the sperm make 180,000 measurements per second. And they do that consecutively, 1, 2, 3, 4, to 180,000 within 1 second to evaluate whether the sperm is an X-bearing sperm or a Y-bearing sperm. And that's done while the sperm go by at 80 kilometers per hour. And that's 50 miles an hour. So the sperm are going past that thing at 50 miles an hour while it's making 180,000 measurements per second. Of course, the thing costs $500,000. So when you integrate all that information, the sort rates can exceed 5,000 sperm per second of each sex at 90% purity. So in practice, that's about 15 million sperm per hour. Now, unfortunately, the typical dose of conventional semen is about 15 million sperm per dose. So this thing's not economical with normal sperm numbers, and so the sex semen product has fewer sperm per dose, around 2 million typically. So some characteristics of sex semen cost about $20 extra per dose. The fertility is lower, partly because of the lower sperm per dose. It is 90% accurate, and we have determined that by looking at more than 1,000 calves from sex semen experiments. It does require excellent management, and we've determined the calves are normal. I only have one data slide, this gives some of the results on pregnancy rates. And if you look on the left part of the slide, this involved about 29,000 first services with sex semen, a pregnancy rate of 45%, with the controls with over 25,000 in the same herds, the same bulls, 56%. If you look at second services, about the same kind of story. So the pregnancy rates were roughly 10 percentage points lower with the sex semen than non-sex semen. That's a huge decrease in fertility. And I use the term percentage points rather than percent, so it's dangerous when you invite a university professor, they want to teach you something. So very important on the next slide, percentage points versus percent. So when you drop the pregnancy rates from 50% to 40%, that's 10 percentage points, but it's 20% fewer animals pregnant, okay? And it's the 20% fewer animals pregnant that you should be thinking about. The same goes if we have a 5% difference, improvement, or a detriment to a treatment. It might be 5 percentage points, it might be 10%. You need to keep that in mind. So with that, sex semen may be appropriate for heifers, especially having heifers have heifer calves. This results in less dystocia because the heifer calves average about 5 pounds less than the bull calves. And those big bull calves that usually result in the cesarean and so on. So if you use sex semen on first services, breed your heifers a little bit earlier than the cows. If they don't get pregnant, one might go to conventional semen for the next services. And there's going to be a real need for female replacements over the next several years. So it's something you might consider. Okay, another niche technology, in my opinion, embryo transfer. We've done a lot of it in my laboratory. And it's a suite of technologies, including superovulation, artificial insemination. And a little secret with embryo transfer, it's from a genetic standpoint, it's more important what semen you use than what donor cow you use. This involves non-surgical embryo recovery and transfer in case of cattle. usually cryopreservation of embryos. And while there are on the order of about 100,000 beef calves produced each year in the U.S. and Canada by embryo transfer, it's only about 1 in 400 beef calves that's born. Now you say, well, is that a lot? Isn't that very much? 100,000 is a lot of calves. But very important, a lot of those 100,000 calves end up being the bulls that are used for artificial insemination, or the dams of bulls of the next generation. So it gets used in a real multiplier effect, and so we need to think of it in those contexts. So a little bit about these technologies. This is an ovary of a cow that wasn't superovulated. She's got one ovulation on one ovary. There's one of two ovaries in a cow that was superovulated. Typically, one gets 10 times more embryos with a superovulated cow than a non-superovulated cow. We used to do all these things surgically, recovery and transfer of embryos. And one of the big changes that occurred about 30 years ago was to switch to non-surgical recovery of embryos and non-surgical transfer of embryos. And of course, that enables producing litters of calves. Now, to get to a little bit more razzle-dazzle stuff, we do a lot of what I call micromanipulation of embryos. And if you look closely on this machine, it's got some joysticks on it. It's kind of like playing computer video games in some respects, but makes clumsy movements of the hands under to find movements under the microscope. One of the techniques we've developed is literally chopping embryos in half. And we use this is a photograph of a bovine embryo with about 100 cells. And we use this microblade to cut the number of the cells into two halves. This microblade is just a piece of a fragment of a razor blade, actually. So we made two embryos out of one. And the big advantage of doing this is you have twice as many embryos. Now, the pregnancy rates are just a little bit lower with the half embryos than the whole embryos, but you typically increase the number of calves produced by a factor of 50%. So instead of maybe getting 100 calves from a particular operation, you get 150 if you cut the embryos in half. One, of course, also gets identical twins if both of those halves work, and those are very valuable for some kinds of research projects. We've made hundreds of these in cattle, but also in horses and sheep and some other species. So let's talk about genetically modified organisms. So currently in the United States, about 90% of the corn that's produced is from genetically modified seed. And about 90% of the soybeans, about 80% of the papaya grown in Hawaii is from transgenic papaya plants. In animals, it's zero. We have a great aversion to from a national standpoint to applying these technologies to animals while we're eating the stuff all the time from the plants we've done that to. So, the technical term for this is transgenesis. And for transgenesis, you can add genes, you can delete genes, or correct genes. And the way we do this is at the one cell stage of the embryo. So if we make the genetic change in the one cell, when it goes to the two cell, that change is copied in the four cell and so on. And in that way, every cell in the body of the animal gets the transgenic change. So what are some of the things you might do with that? More efficient growth. One might have a strain of cattle that has horns, and we want to add poll without losing the other advantages. Let's just get rid of the horns with making a transgenic change. Resistance to disease, and then there's some applications to produce pharmaceuticals in milk and other valuable products in milk or blood or urine. Here's one of my favorite transgenic possibilities. Let's put the growth genes on the Y chromosome. This allows our cow herd to remain small. Females stay small because typically when you have growth genes, not only do you get faster growth, you get a larger mature size. So If we only have it on the Y chromosome, the females in the herd stay small. The male calves that are born grow more efficiently.